Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. He's called the human calendar, and he uses his math and memory skills to set world records and calendar calculations. Mathematics professor Yuznier Vieira currently holds 3 Guinness Book of World Records titles for his calendar calculations. And today, he is visiting Florida Gulf Coast University to share his passion for numbers with mathletes here on campus. Professor Vieira joins us today to showcase his incredible math skills and to share his advice for getting people engaged in the power of mathematics. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. Thank you, Yuli, for having me here. It's my pleasure.
We are talking about math, world records, and more with our guest, the human calendar, Professor Yuznier Vieira on Gulf Coast Live. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Professor Vieira, I want to start by helping people understand just what your unique abilities are and how you've used your math prowess to break several world records. How do you describe what you do?
I think the best way to describe it is to actually show you. So if you don't mind to share your birth date or any date that you feel like you want to know the day of the week. So, for example, if you tell me, just to give you an example, I was born on April 26, 1982. I was born on a Monday. So what I do essentially is calculate the day of the week for any given date.
So I was July 26, 1971. What day is that?
For example, in your case, you were born on a Monday like me. So, yeah, we're Monday people. That's why we like hard work.
Yeah. I do work a little too hard sometimes. I'm accused of that occasionally. So then what is today in 1971?
Today,
August 2nd,
1971, Monday as well.
Oh, okay, seven days later.
What exactly? Makes sense, right? So,
yeah. I'm not a math whiz, but I got that one.
So essentially what I have is a Guinness World Record for the person who can calculate the most day of the week in a minute. So the current record is 111 dates in 1 minute. I was able to calculate that 2 years ago.
So somebody sat across from you and just threw dates at you.
Not exactly, because if someone throws you a date, it's gonna be harder to pick up at right pace. So what I do, I create my own software. I have a software, and essentially the software displays the dates randomly selected. And if I think the date is a Monday, I press 1 on the keyboard. If I think it's a Tuesday, I press 2 on the keyboard. So what I did last time was pressing 111 right keys for 1 minute.
Wow. So what are you thinking of in your mind? I mean, what's happening in your brain? Are you looking at a calendar like we're thinking flipping pages?
No, honestly, what I do is called math. So essentially what I do is a math formula that I created myself. I used to live in Cuba and I wanted to somehow escape from the island. So I was really good at mental math. And say, okay, how can I use my mental math skill to escape from the communism?
See, I would have thought you would have been looking at distances, like 90 miles to Cuba.
Well, yeah, but I knew I was good at mental math, so I have to exploit that talent somehow. So I heard about this competition in Germany. It's called the Mental Calculation World Cup, like the Soccer World Cup, but for mental calculation. Nobody knows much, unfortunately, about it. Like they know about the Soccer World Cup. But they have one of the tasks that they have that they give you is like in 1 minute to calculate the day of the week for dates between 1600 and 2100. So what I did is practice a lot. I was able to go to Germany, and I was able to finish a couple of times in second place. One time I'm the current world champion right now. I'm proud of that. And essentially all I do is practice using a math formula. Just to give you an idea, when you say, for example, August 2nd, 1971, what I do in my head is 71, which is the year. I add the number of leap years, like leap days, since 1900, which is 71.
Ooh, the leap years, I didn't even think of those.
Yeah, because we have leap years every 4 years normally.
Well, yeah, so, but yeah. I mean, I just, you know, I would have been completely off. So I wouldn't even have thought of that.
What I do is a math formula. If I get a 1 at the end, that would be a Monday, like in your case. If I get a 2, it would be a Tuesday. 3 would be a Wednesday. 4, Thursday, and so on. And that's how I'm doing math. Like for 1 minute, I'm doing probably hundreds of calculations in my head.
So when you are walking around in daily life and you happen to see a date or something on the TV screen, are you automatically thinking?
Yes. I don't even know what day is today, but if you tell me if August 2nd, 2017, I will tell you it's a Wednesday. So yeah, it works that way. You have to give me the date because sometimes I'm kind of lost. But if I see any date, yeah, automatically I calculate it.
I'm glad we got the date right in the emails that we got you to get here on the right day. Could you imagine? The guy who knows the dates thought it was a Thursday. Could you imagine? Oh, that would be bad. So let me just try one. September 2nd, 1958.
That was a Tuesday, 1958, September 2nd.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then so June 15th on 12/15.
12/15. It depends because it's not a Gregorian calendar date. So assuming a Gregorian calendar date, June 15, 12/15 will be equivalent to 2015, which actually was a Monday. But in that case, if it's not a Gregorian calendar date, maybe it's a different day. Because the thing is that before the 1600, before 1582, we used to have many calendars. There is a Mayan calendar, the Gregorian calendar. So it depends what calendar you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
But if we do dates after 1600, I can tell you for sure the Gregorian calendar date of the week.
Well, it was the day the Magna Carta was signed. And I think that they were into the Gregorian calendar in the place where that was signed. So you're right on Monday.
Yeah, okay.
So you're right, genius person. let me just make you feel better about that. So how much of this skill is a product of your mind, and then how much is it practice?
I always say like life is 50% aptitude and 50% attitude. And I think that's the right formula. Maybe you have a talent to do mental math, like in my case, or a talent for doing something else, but you need to exploit that talent. It's not about being the best in the world. It's about being the best you can be. In my case, I practice a lot. And that's why right now I'm blessed to have the Guinness World Record. Maybe I don't have it in a few years, but right now I have it because I practice every single day. So I believe in practice.
Are there a lot of competitors?
Yes. If you go to one of those competitions that I talk about, 10 years ago when I started breaking records, we were only a few people that can do this. But right now we are thousands of people, which is not huge, but it's actually a small community of thousands of people that are doing mental math. And yeah, we're proud of it. And hopefully in the next years, we're going to be more.
So when I think of mental math, I think of people at a blackjack table.
Okay.
So do you ever do card counting or anything like that, or could you, or is that completely different from doing the mental math of calendars?
No, it's actually similar, because when you do blackjack, for example, depending on the strategy that you use, essentially you're doing additions and subtraction. You're adding one or taking away one or adding two. So it has to do with mental math. And when I do calendar dates, actually I'm doing additions. So yes, it has to do with that. Actually, I like one of my favorite cities in the world is Las Vegas, and I go there once in a while. I always like having a low profile because you never know.
Yeah, you know what it is.
But yeah,
hi,
I love
checking
going.
I'm the world human record holder with mental math. Don't mind me; I'll just be at the blackjack tables all night.
I love playing games. I believe that you have to be careful when you gamble because you know, you don't gamble with the money of your rent money. You know, you have to gamble with the money you can afford to lose.
Yeah, you have
but
to plan on not having
assuming all
it.
That, I love the game because I think the game is a way to, I would say, to rehearsal for the real life that you will have. So you have to do a bet based on what you estimate, when you see that it's going to happen, whatever you can predict that you can happen, and I enjoy that.
That predictability, though, is kind of tough, but it's easier when you have that math backing you up.
Exactly. And if you have mental math skills, you can actually count up to 6 decks of cards with no problem. Hopefully, if you're a good actor, nobody will see it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Actually, it's actually legal. There is no problem with that. You can actually do it. As long as you use your head, it's okay. It's legal. It's just that if they see you doing that, maybe they kick you out.
Well, they can deny service
if they
feel like you're getting into them too much. Another skill that you've demonstrated is what you call flash math. What is that?
Flash math is actually a visual skill. I wish we can show it today. It's essentially numbers that are in mind that we have numbers projected in front of. Let's say I have a bunch of numbers projected in front of me, and they are flashing in front of me, and I need to add them all. So let's say you have 35 plus 12 plus 55 plus 16. You say 118. So I have this flash math skill, which is essentially given 10 numbers. They're going to be flashing really fast in front of your eyes. Sometimes at a rate of 0.1 seconds, so 100 milliseconds, and you need to add them all. So that's how you practice addition and subtraction, of course.
So you have to do that with, like, flashing these numbers, and you have to be able to remember them and add them or add them as they go.
Actually, I add them as they go because I have an oriental technique that is called the Soroban. The Soroban is like the Japanese version of the abacus, which is a Chinese tool. And once you master one of those tools, you can become really good at adding numbers. Unfortunately, I see some good things and bad things about the Soroban. The good thing is that you can actually add really fast. The bad thing is that I don't feel the numbers. So I'm doing something with my fingers, because that's the way it is. You have to play with your fingers. I have to do something with my fingers that somehow it's going to give me the answer, but I don't feel the number. So I'm very emotional in that
so
sense.
So the finger, using, is it with the beads? Is it with beads?
With the like beads, exactly.
So it's similar doing to that the with the tactile of your fingers, it's not showing up in your mind adequately.
Exactly. Honestly, the way it is, you actually practice a lot with the actual Soroban in front of you, but eventually you get too used to it that you can actually visualize the Soroban in front of you, and all you need to do is move your fingers and imagine the Soroban in your head, and it's in front of you, and you can do the math.
How many hours a day do you practice this?
For me, it was tough because I was born and raised in Cuba. Like in America, we use Western techniques, which is essentially doing like right to left or left to right approach. It's not exactly the way they do it in Japan or China. So I have to relearn everything. So it was really tough because I have to forget that 5 + 2 = 7 because I have to learn in a different way. But once you get used to that way, honestly, it's way faster. And it took me, I would say, to actually learn it, it was easy to learn at the beginning, but to be good at it, at least 3 months, and to be actually an expert, which I believe in almost a year, yeah.
So then, I mean, these are tools that are more tactile. You're using and moving things like, I mean, everybody knows what an abacus is. It's the, okay. What do you think about other tools like computers and pocket calculators? Do you think those are making us just not try as hard?
Honestly, I believe in whatever you have always with you. And what you have always with you is your head, right? Your mind. So if you can have a way to
You don't
to
run
do,
out of batteries.
Exactly. If you don't have a calculator, what would you do? Nothing? No, you still need to do the math. Maybe if you're at Publix doing and you have cash, do I have enough cash or not? Or maybe you're in a blackjack table. I don't know. Whatever it is, mm-hmm. you want to do your math. You want to do your math correctly in your head. And that's why I'm a little against calculators in that sense. I mean, I don't blame you. You have a calculator in front of you and you're doing some math formula that is complicated. Take your time. Use a calculator. That's okay. But it would be nice if you have a way to do it without a calculator. It would be, at least for real life application, it would be way better without a calculator.
It makes sense. And we've all been in that situation where we've been standing at a cash register looking at the poor person sitting there trying to make change because they for some reason put a digit in wrong in the cash register. Have you been there?
Of course.
What do you do? Do you correct them quickly because you can't help it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a little obsessive in that sense.
I'm guessing. If somebody tries to give you the wrong change, wrong guy. We are talking to the human calendar, Professor Yuznier Vieira. Give us a call with your questions or challenges for his math skills at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So tell me what brought you to FGCU today. I guess you're talking to a group of mathletes?
Yes. In my case, I was the main speaker of the mathletes. They're doing a summer camp. And it was a wonderful experience because I actually do some talks every year. But this one was special because the kids were really excited about math. And when you feel the energy in that sense, I mean, you simply need to give back. And it's easy to give back. They are very excited about math. So I enjoy having the pleasure of entertaining them a little bit with math tricks. We call it math tricks, but actually there is some math behind it. So I was able not only to amaze them, but also to explain them what is the math behind that. And it was amazing.
Because so what's a trick? What is a trick?
For example, in the case of the calendar days, I actually kind of explain you. So you get the year, you divide it by 4, add a 1. For example, 71 divided by 4 would be around 17.75. Round up would be 18. 71 plus 18 is 89. Plus one more, because 20 centuries, one more is 90. We have a 90 so far. Let's say August 2nd, so 92 because the day is 2. And August for me is number 0. Okay? Number
I have no idea what
no,
you just
92
said.
Divided by 7. 92 divided by 7 give you a remainder of 1. If mm-hmm. the remainder of 92 divided by 7 is 1, that means the date, August 2nd, 1971, was a Monday. If it is a 2, it's a Tuesday. If it is a 3, it's a Wednesday. I know it takes more time to explain than to do. But
so each day has a number assigned to it?
Exactly. Each day will give you either 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I mean, that's it.
So what did the kids think? I mean, what were their reactions?
They're amazed. I mean, at the beginning, they can't believe that is math. But once I explained them, they realized, oh, my God, there is so much beautiful, so much beauty behind math that, you know, that expand their horizons. And it's wonderful to see their reactions.
It's always fun to be a kid when you have a cool trick, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's nice to feel like you're the smart. Have you noticed any difference in kids or how they've been? I feel like it's getting cooler and cooler to be good at math and science.
Honestly, I think I have the theory that the main problem is that it's acceptance. There is, unfortunately, in my opinion, I mean, there is some bad acceptance of being bad at math. It's okay. It's like, I'm bad at math. I'm okay with that. No, you shouldn't be okay with that. No, nobody says I'm bad at reading because maybe they're too afraid to say that. But people are honestly saying I'm bad at math. And that's what I mean. That might be true for you or maybe not. But maybe if we just stop saying that and we just pay more attention, I believe we can do amazing things. Because I have the feeling I do this for a living and I have the I motivate students all around the world every day, and I've seen students that they say at the beginning they're bad at math, And after practicing, they become good. So it's not about being good or bad. It's about you practicing and making sure you're the best you can be.
Yeah, I think you're right. It seems like math is one of those things that people give themselves an excuse.
Exactly.
They say, I'm not good at it. And so therefore, they then don't try. They don't practice. They're just not into it. And I did that myself growing up. I just wasn't into math, so I didn't like it. But when I have to do it, when I'm doing my taxes, things like that, or when I'm in Vegas,
exactly.
You do the math and you exactly. practice it and you get better.
Exactly. And honestly, in my opinion, that's our main challenge as math professors, as math instructors. We need to motivate students to be better at math because math is cool. And it is. Honestly.
It can be.
Exactly. It can be. And so you have to teach them in a fun way. Unfortunately, I agree that we're teaching math maybe the same way for the last 200 years, and that has to be changed. And there are some things that we're doing every day, but we probably need to do more, we are as professors. But also, we need to somehow communicate to everyone that math is cool, and that's our main message. And every time I go to a conference, I always try to encourage students to be better at math.
So how do you see people making math fun? There are professors like yourself. What kind of ways are they using it to make it where kids want to get engaged? I mean, because you're talking to mathletes, so they're obviously already into math.
One of the things that we need to do is encourage students to get the answers with different approaches. We are all human, but at the same time, we're all different. The way we think is not necessarily the same way. So maybe if you want to do 5 plus 4 is 9, maybe one way is getting 5 plus 4, but another way is getting 7 plus 2 is also 9. So you just need to give them approaches, and they will figure out what is the best one for them. When I do, just to give an example, maybe it's too mathematical what I'm going to say, you let me know. But for example, let's say you want to divide a number by 5, 12 divided by 5. That's actually 2.4. But the way to do it, instead of saying 2.4 like I just say, let me just multiply 12 times 2, which is 24, and then divide it by 10, 2.4. 24 divided by 10 is actually 2.4 because all you need to do is move the decimal place. So what I'm trying to say—
That's like another way of approaching it.
Exactly. We have a decimal system. And honestly, because we have a decimal system, because, you know, most of us, we have 10 fingers, that's why we have a decimal system. And dividing by 10 and multiplying by 10 is way easier than anything else. So we need to maybe rearrange the problem in a way that is easier for our decimal system. That could be one way to engage people. Because when they do 12 divided by 5, maybe they have problem with long divisions and they can't do it and then they give up.
Yeah, I actually visualize that little thing with the little number here and the big number here and the little half a square.
But in order for you to do it mentally, it's hard to visualize all that.
Yeah.
So you need a different approach. And that's what we do. We figured out approaches every single day with every single kid. It's a challenge for us, and I love the challenge.
Does it completely throw you off to go metric?
Metric? You mean like exactly?
Yeah, because I know that when I think in numbers, I usually think in 60 minutes because I work on an hour.
Okay.
And I work on number of minutes and, you know, 30 minutes, and I'm counting down all the time. And every minute has 60 seconds in it. So that's how my mind works math-wise.
Makes
because
sense.
That's what I'm used to and practiced,
exactly.
like you said. So does it change things for you when you have to go to different systems when you're thinking of time rather than a regular 10-digit decimal?
Honestly, no, not necessarily. If you want to go binary or hexadecimal, decimal, you can actually do it with no problem. Honestly, we are more. Let's say genetically, in my opinion, we're more genetically decimals because the way we are. But again, you can once you know the math behind it, you can go to any system with no problem.
Mm-hmm. And I have a picture of you that my producer sent to me is of you in front of a giant swirling pie.
Yes.
What does pie mean to you?
Pi, well, as people know, pi is actually the ratio between the length of the circumference and the diameter of the circle. And pi is a beautiful number because it's hard to explain it, but at the same time, it's in real life. If you divide any circle, the length of the circumference by the diameter, you always get that beautiful number that is 3.1415 something, right? No, a number that never ends, and we're still figuring it out. It's an irrational number. So again, when you see one of those things that in real life that you can't explain, all you can do is be more curious and try to learn more about it.
Let's keep trying. So tell me a little bit more about yourself. You were born in Havana, Cuba back in 1983.
1982 I was born, yeah.
82?
Yeah.
It's written 83 here, sorry. So when what day was that?
It was a Monday like you.
So was there anything happening at that time in Cuba at home or at school that kind of helped you develop this talent of yours, or did you just kind of just...
Honestly, I have to be honest. I was born and raised in Cuba, and education over there, I have a good education. I mean, no complaints about it. I mean, I have complaints about something else, but not necessarily education. And I learned a lot. I studied computer science, which expand my horizons. I mean, I do programming. I did a master in mathematics at the University of Havana. But then later you are a professor. I was able to be a professor at the University of Havana. I was making $20 for 1 month. So what? As you can see, that's nothing. And honestly,
I can see where your complaints might be.
Exactly. And honestly, I realized later that, you know, the socialist system that they have, or what they call socialism, I don't even believe it. It's actually a dictatorship. I was able to travel to Germany. The first time I went out from Cuba, I went to Germany to Berlin specifically, and I went to this museum that says exactly how the story, the you know, what history say that the East Berlin people were going from East Berlin to West Berlin, right? In Cuba, if you they actually tell me otherwise.
So you learned a whole different version of
exactly,
history.
You have your brain has been watched. So for me, it was a you know, like a good hit on my head.
A wake up call, right?
A wake up call. I open my eye. That opens my eyes, and I see a lot of people in Cuba like that, and that's why I want to open people's eyes in my country of Cuba, because unfortunately they watch your brain, and that's wrong. That's really wrong. Unfortunately, that I came to the beautiful land of America, United States, and back then we have a beautiful law that you know that allows Cubans to come here because of I'm an asylum refugee. And
when did you come here?
I came here in 2007. I didn't know any English back then. It's not that I know much, but I'm trying to do my best.
No, it's pretty good. I mean, only 2007, you didn't know any English at all.
Yeah, I was 25 when I came to US, and honestly, I mean, it has been a blessing for me because five years ago, I think it was, yes, four years ago, I became an American citizen. And from now on, instead of representing Cuba, I'm representing USA in every competition I go. So I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of being nationalized American.
Well, congratulations on your citizenship. You. Have you gone back to Cuba at all to visit anybody?
No. Actually, I wasn't allowed to go to Cuba because I have a Guinness World Record. While I was living in Cuba, I became kind of a celebrity back then, 10 years ago. And when I left Cuba, I actually went to Mexico and I crossed the border.
So there were some sore feelings about
exactly.
It when you left.
Exactly. They treat you like a traitor and they don't let you go back to Cuba. Actually, my parents were in Cuba. They struggled a lot because they did bad things to them. And fortunately, 3 years ago, after I became an American citizen, I was able to claim them and they're living with me here in Miami. And I'm very blessed in that sense.
Okay, great. So when you were young in Cuba, did that give you the ability to really kind of concentrate on doing this practice? I mean that.
Well, one of the things that I'm not good, but at the same time were good for me, is because in 80 something in Cuba, I mean even probably in America, we didn't have internet.
Yeah, we didn't have computers.
Exactly, and I have a bunch of time to kill.
Yeah.
And I love baseball, for example. I love baseball, and I like to find the average of a batter.
So how many channels did you have, for example, on TV?
How many
TV channels?
Well, I've been on Discovery Channel.
No, I mean when you were young in Cuba.
No, I didn't. How many TV channels? Only two. Only two.
So there wasn't a whole – you had a lot of time.
Exactly. You only have two channels and cartoons maybe 1 hour for one of the channels.
Yeah. And then everything else is news.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
And news. And you know what kind of news?
Yeah.
News, fake news.
Yeah. For real fake news.
So, yeah, I remember, I mean, it was tough. And actually, I remember when I was at the university, I have to go in a bus. It took me like 2 hours just one way to get there. You really want to be at the university.
You really want to get there if you're going to spend two hours on a bus. So you spend that time just maybe staring off into space and doing calculations.
Yeah. In my case, I was blessed because I created a game. But while taking the bus, I was able to get a bus ticket, which is essentially like a six-digit number. And I said, what can I do with this six-digit number? And I created this game that is called Hectoc, H-E-C-T-O-C. Hectoc is essentially given six-digit numbers, how to add addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, and make it 100. And what is funny is that it's always, at least fun for me, you always can get 100 no matter what. So I encourage to the people that listen to us to go to hectoc.com. To take a look at what we have.
How do you spell it?
H-E-C-T-O-C.
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 All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank our guest, the Human Calendar, Professor Yuznier Vieira. Thanks for joining Gulf Coast Live. I really appreciate it today.
Thank you.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.
In circles, I'll never make it back. Oh, figure of eight goes around, 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 around. Just might win.